So this is the fourth session of our meeting, or is it the third? Third. Ah, there you go. I'm way ahead of myself. So it's the third session of our meeting, and we've gone through this model of our experiences, you know, that some of which are so hardwired, experiences of abandonment, experiences of being left, experiences of now starting to, you know, collate all of that to feeling like anything that looks like there's going to be an increase in distance between and someone I feel is critical to my survival. Consequence of that, and I see this third piece, or the fear of rejection, is that it's more an after effect. It makes us more reluctant to risk. It makes us worry about, you know, what if I do this and I'm sent off to the Antarctic of emotional life, right? You know, what if the highway collapses under me and I'm gone forever? The roads would buckle and heave and the chasm would open and then I'd be gone. Not that I'd be in pain or agony or, oh my gosh, you know, I'll end up crippled for the rest of my life because I'll be so badly injured. None of that. Very much went up, then I'll be gone. And a quick story, so I've lived with that fear, not able to drive anywhere that I hadn't been to before. I had a job where I had to drive to new places. I'd have to drive the night before to know where I was going. I was really good at memorizing maps, so I knew all alternative routes. So one day, Frank, my husband, was going down to the States to visit his family. And I said, well, this is a great time. I'm going to go visit my best friend in London and take our daughter with us. And she was very little at the time. Well, not little. She was probably six or seven, probably. But young enough that, you know, it sometimes requires two parents to kind of handle all of this. But I wanted to test myself. So we're driving from Ottawa to, so he agreed to accompany me as I drove from Ottawa to London, and then he would go back to Toronto and fly to see his parents. So I practiced on that drive and it was great. And then he did some thought challenging. He said, you know, what's the likelihood of roads buckling and heaving and a chasm opening and you dropping into it? And I kind of went, well, there's a possibility. He goes, yeah, but what's the possibility? So we do this whole cognitive challenging thing and it comes down to not very likely. Wonderful weekend with my best friend. The two kids get along beautifully. And, you know, it's just absolute heaven. Time to come to go. And, you know, we're all in tears. Don't want to leave each other. I get on the highway. A particularly hot, hot day. I get on the highway. And I start to pull onto the main, whatever the highway route is. And I turn on the radio and it says, due to the extreme heat in Toronto this weekend, the roads have buckled and heaved, and all traffic is being diverted through Toronto. You can imagine in that moment, right? Those keywords, buckled and heaved. Even as I'm talking right now, my heart's racing and my belly's sort of gone into a cramp, right? What are the possibilities? What are the probabilities that an announcer somewhere in Toronto, in the Toronto area, would use those exact words, right? So long story short, I make it home, and I'm doing a training program in cognitive therapy with Brian Shaw, who's a lovely, lovely trainer, and I use this example. And he said, well, how did you get home? Like, that's huge. How did you get home? I said, all I could think of was I had to work the next day. It's all I could think of, because the catastrophe then was, if I don't make it home, I'm going to miss work and I can't afford to miss work. Right? And he said, oh, so you have a set of values. There was something that was really important to you. And I've carried that for a really long time with the sense of there is always something that seems to be in us that is a resource. And everything that you've said, that we've shared before this talk started, you've pointed to a resource that you didn't know you had, or that you had the skills to build. For me, the second piece is really important. We don't have the benefactors or things like that, but we've learned by modeling. We've learned by that. You think about it generationally, the things that you're facing are not things that your parents faced. Right? I'm older than all of you, so the things that I'm facing are definitely not the things that you're facing right now, right? So your resourcing is going to have to be different. Now, it comes themselves differently. Some people reach for aggression as a resource. Some people reach to coolness or aloofness as a resource. Some people cling. We're afraid to let go. I dread to think what I'm going to have to do with my 2,000 books in my house if I ever have to move. I'm willing it to all of you. I mean, there's just this sense, right? This sense of, I can't afford to lose anything, right? Because they're both my resources, but they're also a hindrance. So when I come up against a situation, I have to remember I'm also coming up in the presence of someone or some aspect, some experience that is resourcing itself differently from the way I do. But if I don't know that, the way in someone approaches my request or approaches me may be triggering because I don't understand where they're coming from immediately, and I'm afraid to respond because I don't want my response to be pushed aside. So we're not even going to call it rejection, just pushed aside. And we do this every day. We have to say no very often. But there are some things for which no has this direct line to, if I'm rejected, then I'm going to feel like I'll be left behind. I mean, this certainly happens in, you know, workplace, you know, scenarios, right? If I don't take on this project, I feel like I'm going to be left behind. With families, if I don't have Christmas dinner here next year, then, you know, I'm not going to be, I'll be cast out of the family. There are these kinds of things that we hold inside ourselves that we don't even realize we do. So the fear of rejection comes up. People leaving, self-worth. I don't know that I can reach for my resources. Right? I don't have that built habit of reaching for my resources. So of course, I'll do anything to avoid rejection because I don't have confidence in where I am right now. So this is the thread from abandonment, seeing abandonment as a confusion about resources. You know, and as you said earlier, Janice, you know, as an infant, we don't know we have those resources. Crying and kicking and having a tantrum is a resource. Not a skillful one, but it's a resource. That's the resource that we knew at that age. And then it became hopefully a little more civilized, a little bit more communicative, a little bit more skillful. But the infant who's experiencing the internal distress is unaware of their own capacity to manage this. And of course, we carry a seed of that, right? How often have we said, and I said, to a friend a couple of days ago, I said, I just don't know how much. And they said, it feels that way. But look at all the times when we've managed to find some insight out of all of this and move on and continue to do what we have to do, right? And that raises something that's very challenging. I don't know what my resource is until I express it. That's the part that probably just sinks me every time, because I feel like as soon as the problem arises, sometimes I haven't been attending to what's unfolding. I mean, it's not like a physical bag I carry around and I rummage in there and go, oh, look, here's the gadget for, you know, getting rid of my noisy neighbor. I wish it worked that way, but it doesn't. So there's the challenge, and there's where the internal distress tolerance work becomes so crucial. Can I sit beside this challenge? So that's what we mean by sitting with. The challenge is there, it's present, and can I let it evolve? Unless it's a really dangerous situation, can I let it evolve so that sometimes just the waiting resolves it? Sometimes I see more clearly what is perhaps needed or what can perhaps be experimental. Whoa, so that's what I need to do. So that's what I'm doing. But as long as we're agitated inside and we're clinging and desperate for some change, we'll settle for a change that may not be useful. Either because we're afraid that we won't be, or afraid that we will discover we have no resources. It's an interesting loop, isn't it? I mean, it starts at infancy and it goes through that abandonment scenario, then it goes through the leaving scenario, then it goes through the fear of rejection scenario, and then it comes back with, oh, wait, I've developed resources. You know, then I can know that, you know, abandonment is not likely because I have resources. The very fact that I can see I've got resources means abandonment is not going to be a reality, you know, in its full-fledged form. Then, yeah, people leaving can be sad. I've got the resources to work with that. And then, kind of like, look at me go. Ooh, look at that. Look at me go. Drove right across Toronto. Detours and all, and the road didn't buckle and heave. At least not on the detours, right? I had that resource. And then there's always, my metric is, if I am this afraid of this person rejecting me, I need to look at the relationship. How have I elevated this relationship that it means so much to me? I discovered something in, 10 seconds ago. What's that phrase that they keep using on the internet? I was, 2 minutes old when I learned it. I hate that phrase, but okay, I'll go with it. I think I was like 7 days old when I learned this, that I have a relationship with a friend and a couple of friends. And anytime we tried to get together, it was always like, oh, let's try for 3 months from now. Oh, let's try for, let's see how it goes and I'll give you a call. And I would go along with this because, better a connection than no connection, right? But there was something inside me that was kind of like, oh, yeah. Not that I'm a, we have to see each other weekly kind of person, but there was something about the distance. And the distance was always, the time distance, and the time distance was always, let's check in to see when we can meet in 3 months. It wasn't like, let's meet in 3 months, right? And I started to think about this, and I thought, I'm not comfortable with this. I'm just not comfortable with what all of this means, but I value this in my head. I value this friend. And one of my other friends pointed out and said, why are you putting up with this shit? Oh, what? If you want to meet sooner, just tell them you want to meet sooner. If they don't want to meet you sooner, then say, let me know when you do, but I'm not waiting for 3 months to find out if we're going to meet. Oh, what? You mean I can actually say this? So I guarantee you, I think I was, 7 days in a process of learning how we subjugate ourselves because everything is, so that fear of rejection, we can only see it, and that's where the down regulation comes in, whether it's meditation, whether it's running, whether it's yoga, whether it's anything. And in fact, physical activity is really good. We've mentioned Tai Chi as a process. All of that is really important. And seeing how every movement leaves the other movement behind. And we can experience beginning every time I make a mistake. I've got to keep going. It's like piano lessons. I drove my piano teacher crazy because every time I made a mistake, I'd go back and start the entire process again. And he would say, play through the mistake. Just play through it. And I couldn't. I would freeze at the moment of the mistake and I'd have to start all over. And he finally fired me as a student, which is probably a good thing. So that's our practice for this. Ask it to tone down, to turn down the volume. And thank that experience for reminding.